Hey there, welcome to Sauce and Bomb Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, how to grow with its Sauce Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful Sauce businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me are Daniel and Thomas, famous founders of Sauciest, the largest community-driven B2B Sauce event in the Nordics and expanding. So welcome, good to see you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Like, I mean, you had me at famous. Nobody has ever called us famous before. So it's like, you know, this is going to be a good conversation. I feel it. Right, Thomas?
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate it. Nice to be here.
A lot of flattery ahead.
So. Yeah, exactly. it's the hamburger method. Like, you know, the bread and the salad and whatnot, the top layer. That's like, you know, it's okay. It's okay, you get some good feedback. Then you get to the meat. That's when you give them the hard feedback. And then you finish with, like, you know, the dressing, tomato in the bottom, and the bread again, like, soften up a little bit.
Okay. All right. Yes. I have it's a vegetarian burger today.
Oh.
Veggie. Exactly.
No harsh questions, but yeah, before, you know, we get into Sauciest and how you guys are doing, let's, you know, get to know you a little bit. So, you know, your background, just in a nutshell, you know, who you are, what you do. Thomas, want to start?
Yeah. I mean,
I like
sure.
that. Age before beauty. So you went to Thomas yeah. first. I like that.
I'm the oldest one here. So next year I'm turning 50. I have three teenage daughters, or actually my oldest one, she just turned 21. Yesterday, I haven't told you that, Dana, she was actually in a car accident. But
oh, no.
She's okay? Good, but apparently there were someone that forgot to hit the brake, so she was struck on the side, but she's okay, a little bit shaken up, but all's good.
Oh, no.
Then I have an 18-year-old. And I have a 14-year-old girl. So that's amazing. Very blessed there. I'm married, living in Lund in the south of Sweden. I'm always been into computers. I'm an engineer by trade, but worked in SaaS for the last 15, 20 years in different roles, starting out in sales engineering, going into marketing, product, working with ecosystems and so on. And I had the pleasure of meeting Daniel 7 or 8 years ago when we worked at InRiver, a Swedish SaaS company that had a great growth. I think I was among the 15 first employees. We went up to 400 and it was a great journey. And I think that's it. Besides work, I try to sort of climb the ranking of pinball. So I'm... competing in that. So I just participated in the Swedish championship. I didn't do very well, but that's a new one next year.
Absolutely. We root for you.
Yeah, exactly. You have at least one athlete here in this duo.
And then nice. Since awesome. the last few years here, since 2021, I've been fully engaged with building the Sauciest community, but I guess we will come to that later on.
We definitely will. Daniel?
So I guess, you know, listening to Thomas here, I'm the spring chicken in this duo. I'm a little bit younger, 42 years old, also a father of two young. So I'm, in this case, I'm a little bit behind Thomas. I have very young children. Started late in life, let's put it that way. I have a soon-to-be 3-year-old and soon-to-be 7-year-old that are keeping me and my wife busy. I mean, we love it. It's a lot of fun. Keeps us young, keeps us, you know, on our toes, let's put it that way. So a lot of my time when people ask us, you know, who are you, what do you do, I try to define myself as I'm first of all a father, I think I'm a decent husband, and I love all kinds of sports. And then people think like, ooh, what type of sports do you do? I'm these days more of a guy that watches sports. So I love anything football, anything paddle, all racket sports really, really I enjoy. I try to keep up a little bit, but it's not really happening. And then to pay my bills and to keep my mind sharp, obviously we hang out here in the Sauciest community and try to build a forum for all the B2B SaaS operators in Europe here to find a destination, to find a forum where they can learn from each other. Really, that's the most simple way we can describe this. It's a forum where you can be inspired and learn from your peers. I started my career some 20 years ago. I'm a little bit more of a one-trick pony here. Started in sales, and then probably for the past 15 years have been running revenue teams for SaaS companies. So if there's one thing I know is how to scale revenue teams and how to make sure that, you know, salespeople are, they're a little bit special, and how to make sure that they get the most out of themselves, and how to make sure they can work as a unit, and how to make sure that they play along with whatever the objective is for the rest of the organization. So I've had lots of fun doing those things. And then 3 years ago, Thomas and I decided that it's time for us to, I don't want to say give back to the community, but we felt like it's time for us to bring the community together. And here we are now.
Yeah, and you actually spent 10 years in the US.
Yes. I spent 10 years in the US. I took a company there. I worked for a German company. It was a startup at that point. And basically the other senior people there already had wives and children, and I did not. So they were like, okay, so you seem to be the most suitable person to move to the US. All jokes aside, I moved to the US. It was a lot of fun. We had good success with that business as well. And then Thomas and I had a chance to replicate that exercise a little bit when we met. And then none of us moved to the US. But I usually say my biggest success in the US after 10 years in the US running SaaS companies, working for SaaS companies, has nothing to do with SaaS. I met this wonderful woman in a bar that now is my wife and the mother of my children. And now I tricked her to move to Sweden with us. So that is my biggest win over there.
Okay. All right. That's a good one.
Yeah. Pretty proud of that one. Biggest win there.
Awesome. All right. Well, I guess we have 6 kids between us.
How old are yours?
My son is 6.
Oh, okay.
So I started earlier.
Yeah.
Get that from my list, and you know,
yeah,
the rest.
And I don't know, Anna, if you get a chance to tell your story in the podcast, or you always have to like listen to your guest stories. Like
sometimes I go on a podcast, and you know, I tell a story.
Why don't you tell your story? Because we thought it was fascinating when we first had a chat here. Because you guys are your little family, you're moving around a little bit and trying different cities and destinations and countries and continents. Tell us about that.
Okay, professional podcasters on my podcast, so I get away. Yes, it's a small family. My kid is 6. It's his 5th country. He lived in Russia, Peru, Colombia, Turkey, and now Vietnam. We move around. We love it. Thank God SaaS Group is totally fine with that. That's the first thing they told me when I got hired. They were like, we really don't care where you are. Like, just do a good job.
Right.
And that's what I do. So like I said, head of growth, SaaS Group. Hell of a journey. Lots of freedom. Lots of fun doing this, meeting amazing people, moving around the world with SaaS Group, hosting events, hopefully, you know, hosting something with, along with Sassiest. But yeah, we'll get there.
Okay. It's happening. You heard it here first.
Yes.
One day, okay. One day it's happening soon.
Okay. It's on record. It's on record.
It's on record. There you go.
So yeah. All right. Let's get back to you guys. And, you know, obviously, you know, you decided that you want to do something with the community. Why? Like, what was the inspiration? Like, why did you think that Sweden wanted what you're building now?
I mean, actually started out of our curiosity. I mean, we had a great journey among other companies at InRiver, and we felt like, you know, there are so many other companies out there in the Nordics, in Europe, that has made their journeys, they have made their successes and so on. And many of us don't really know so much about it. And there is so much to learn from each other. So, I mean, as many others do, it started with the podcast in November 2020. And it rapidly grew into something much more. We got a lot of following. We also did Clubhouse when it was popular a few months. Did a lot there. We actually got a lot of traction. And well, suddenly it grew into a community. So started this Slack community that's now, we have more than 1,000 companies, I think, involved. And we did our first event in fall of 2021 when it was still COVID. So it was a digital event. We had a lot of attendees, sponsors coming on. And we see that this is something with a bigger vision. We see that, you know, we can't really replicate what is done in the US, the US playbook. There is a special situation here in Europe, and we understood that, you know, this can grow into something much more. And we wanted to accelerate what is possible here in Europe. And Daniel, maybe you have something to add there.
I know. I think you covered it well. And there's a funny story that preempted this a little bit. So Thomas and I were good friends, and we felt that we wanted to do something together. And one of the options was actually, and I don't know if you remember, Thomas, you know, before this community exercise, but should we start another SaaS company? And we sat down, and there was a third person involved in that. We drew up, you know, what are we doing? We had a product in mind and so on. And I can't remember the details why we felt that was a horrible idea. Maybe we realized that the product itself would take too long, or the product market fit wasn't mature, or whatever. And then really this relationship here,
we couldn't really say who would buy this product.
Yeah. And this relationship here was really, you know, not born, but it was continued. We had worked so well for so many years, and we said we need to have a common project together. And Sassy has seemed to be the natural fit. And I wish we could sit here and say this is all by design. We had a master plan. That's bullshit. Things evolved and developed in a way we couldn't necessarily foresee. And if there's one thing we're good at, when we see an opportunity, we're really fast at moving and making the most of it. But some of the things happened organically as we progressed here. So we've had lots of fun now doing this for almost 3 years.
Okay, and pretty successfully, I should say.
So we just wanted to hang out, and here we are hanging out every day.
That's good. That's kind of the best setup that you can wish for. But, you know, you started in Sweden, but as far as I know, from the very beginning, it was like all your content was in English. You didn't just like niche down to like just hanging out with your Swedish founders, right?
Yep.
But in a way, you still niche down, right? You only, you want to see like operating founders in the community, $2 million, I think, beginning with $2 million ARR.
Yeah, exactly.
And onwards. So yeah, why did you choose to focus on that niche?
Yeah. So actually, we didn't start with Sweden. We started with the Nordics from the start. And, you know, we have Finland, we have Iceland, and usually, you know, Swedes and Danes, they don't really understand each other. So it was natural for us to start in English. And we also saw that it had a potential of growing as well.
Yeah. And also, one has to remember that the SaaS world is very, very international. So even if you would say, and this would be my recommendation to anyone, even if you would do it in Germany, like, you know, you like there are German SaaS people, or call it this way, people in any given country that don't speak the native language. That's just the nature of our business. So if you want to be inclusive, like English is the only way to go. And we always wanted to make sure that as long as you fulfill the criteria that you're, you know, of a certain rank, you represent a company of a certain size and so on, anybody and everybody is welcome. I think that was our base, and that's why we also decided to do it in English.
Yeah, and I also think you mentioned why we are working with companies above 2 million euros in ARR. I think also our background as operators, we have worked for these companies that have scaled, that's gone international and so on. We are not, you know, founders that have worked for trying to start a lot of startups, looking for funding and so on. That's not where we come from. So I think it was natural for us to do something that sort of was aligned with our experience and so on.
Yeah. And you also, when you in any type of business, but especially I think when you have a community, you need to have something that unites. And I'm not going to say that it's a magical number, the 2 million mark, but for many founders and SaaS companies, it's a little bit of a breaking point. And we've learned that across, you know, the 15, 20 years that we've worked in this space. In the past, running a company and having ARR between 0 and 2 million mark, a lot of the energy from the management team and the founders and so on was based on financing. Like, how do we make sure we have enough funds for the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months? So a lot of the organization and focus and energy from the management team is spent heavily on that financing piece. And we felt that, you know, if that's what's relevant for you, there's other forums. There's a bunch of local incubators and so on where you can talk about how to raise your Series A or seed or whatnot. What we do in our forum is we talk about the next step. So potentially you've already had your dog years behind you. It doesn't mean that just because you broke $2 million or euros in ARR, everything is, you know, nice and dandy and so on. But for most people, then it's about like you have product market fit, you have some go-to-market fit. It's about accelerating. And that's where our community thrives. Like, how do I accelerate my activities? How do I double down on what works and so on? That's where we're at. And that's really what has brought the community together.
That's awesome. All right. Makes sense. So what are the, you know, I think everyone wanted a community in 2021, 2022. Not a lot of them succeeded. Like the amount of communities that died, I think it's fascinating. So what were the first steps for you to unite people to, you know, make sure that everyone feels like they belong and, you know, keep the narrative, keep the context so that people want to stick?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, from the start, we saw that it's all about connecting people and make them bring value to each other. So, and that's what's been driving the community all the time, the engagement, the willingness to share, the connections that have been made. And already in the end of 2021, when we still had full-time jobs, we decided to go all in. And one thing was that we wanted to create a CEO network for these B2B SaaS CEOs. So in the end of that year, we had 130 CEOs signing up for this new network. And we also started the executive network when we have people in 10 or 11 different disciplines, everything from sales, marketing to product engineering, customer success, people, finance, operations, RevOps, and so on. And they meet in total. We have 200 to 250 meetings a year with these groups where they sit down, they share experiences. We are there moderating, making sure that this works out. And I think also that that's a part of the secret, that it's one thing, you know, just starting a community and let them meet each other on their own and not really following up on it. It's a lot of work keeping a community alive. So we make sure to put in that work, and we make sure also to let the people in the community be seen, connect, have different opportunities, both online, but also offline in the meetups, in the conferences and so that we do. And if you enable this in a good way, it becomes not a nice to have, it becomes, you know, must have, because they get so much value out of it. And as we have seen now, I mean, the community is just growing and growing year by year.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely. And exactly. I'm sorry, I just have like one more question to add to this. And maybe Daniel, you have something to add to the answer. Was it a paid community from the beginning? How did you figure out like what is the value, like what is the price tag that you can put there?
Yeah, great question. And just before I answer that, just to add also to what Tama said, I think coming back to your initial statement when you said like there's a lot of communities pop up, a lot of them fail. I believe I know why they fail. And I'm not saying that we sit on all the answers, but too many people don't see community building as it's a human exercise where you need to understand the psychological aspects of why people want to spend time with each other and why they feel that there's a belonging. Just because you put people together in a room and they have a good time that evening in a room, that doesn't mean you have a community. So sometimes I think about this myself, and I am not affiliated to anyone. I'm just going to put that out there. But we've had some major elections in Europe and in the US this year. And I think sometimes you have to think about a community the way the political parties do it. Like you have to unite people around a critical question or around a critical challenge or, you know, link them to a critical opportunity. But people need to feel a sense of belonging where it's like, you know, I'm in this room, not just because I was invited, but everybody else in this room has something that is similar to me, whether it's my thoughts or my background or my needs, whatever it is. So you have to understand what is it that unites this core. And for us, it was very clear what united that core. So I think you have to start there. And then it's also very important that you make them, like Thomas said, you make everybody aware that you see and hear them. And it's like, I understand. And if you look at a political party, they go and rally into these small cities and be like, hey, I promise that, you know, you don't have a job now, but I promise you will have a job in 5 years. They unite them around the problem and they feel seen. And I think you need to do that in a community as well. Mm-hmm. And there's different methods of how you make them aware and seen. And then I think the third aspect that many people probably don't think of is for a community to be able to live and grow, it needs to be multidirectional in the conversation. It can't be the community owners that drive all the conversation, nor can it be a few people that drive all the conversation. Everybody needs to be involved and engaged. So you need to find a method where everyone feels, first of all, comfortable in speaking their mind.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you make sure that somebody that's a first-time CMO has the courage to speak their mind and ask a question? When they know that in the room here, somebody that has been a CMO for 20 years and she has 50 people on her team, she knows a lot more than me. I don't want to sound like an idiot or stupid and so on. How do you break those barriers where everybody feels like it's a safe space? So you got to think about all of these aspects, and it requires, you know, quite some work, and there's a machinery to it. But once you've achieved that, then you will see that the community will grow. And then coming back to your question about paid community, people understand and they live in the real world. Everybody that's part of a community, like they all work for companies. They all work for companies that need to make money. So they understand that, you know, it's the nature of business that every company at some point need to make money. But if you make them feel like the product, if you make them feel like they are leads into something, you're never going to build a community. So you need to find a way to just give a bunch of value. And then once you have that trust and so on, and for us, it was like to be part of the community initially, and still for most of them, except the CEOs, it doesn't cost anything necessarily. Mm. For us, the money-making exercise, the first one was like, if you want to join the event, hopefully you want to join us. There's a ticket to be purchased. There's a sponsorship if you want to have more visibility there and so on. But then it was a very natural fit. They have received so much value from us and from each other that they didn't feel sold to.
Absolutely.
And I think that's probably why many companies fail. Like, come into my Slack and now I want to sell you something, then you're not going to build a community.
No, and to take you behind the scenes, you know, in 2021, still working full time, we decided to start the Slack community. We spend a lot of time recruiting people to the Slack community. We have 500 people joining the first day. I mean, we thought about, is this something that we should charge for? Should it be like a freemium version or anything like that? But we came to the conclusion that it should be free, not having any, you know, business plan for the future. We just felt that, you know, we want to bring as many people together as possible. And then eventually when we came down the road, you know, we had the paid events. We decided to do the CEO network, which is a paid network. We also need to have some skin in the game there. But a lot of the things are free. Our meetups are free. Our executive groups are free. We do other things as well. And I think, you know, it's a part of community building. If you're going to charge for everything and, you know, it will not grow in the same way. And as Daniel iterated, we never give out any lead lists or emails to even our biggest sponsors, because then you kill your community. You lose the credibility and your members are just the product.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Thank you for sharing. And I mean, since, you know, we started with how to build a good community, what are the first steps to grow it? What about the events? And, you know, asking for a friend.
We love the events. I mean, usually we just sit here by our computer day in, day out. I was talking to someone, can we have a coffee in Copenhagen? No, we can't. We're going to sit with our computers every day until Christmas and New Year's here.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah, but yeah, we do host our little ones, right? Mm-hmm. Like 30, 40 people. And it's already a lot of work to you know, to bring people together, to make sure that we also niche down to, you know, to make sure that people in the room understand each other and they have this sense of belonging. And it's not just, you know, let's fill the seats. But, you know, I obviously have no idea how you guys manage the big one.
No, so, yeah. We almost don't know either. I mean, we started out, you know, end of 2021, still doing the full-time jobs in the middle of COVID. We took a bold step. We said we're going to do the largest B2B SaaS event ever in the Nordics. We're going to fill up the main sort of coolest event place in Malmö with more than 1,000 people. We were two guys coming from nowhere, and they wanted, you know, half the fees in advance, both for the venue, for the food, for the everything. And, you know, we had to write, you know, strange contracts and so on to start with. But, you know, we had faith. We had a good momentum. But, you know, COVID was still around. And I think, you know, I don't know, 6 weeks before, aiming for 1,000, I think we were 128 people signing up. And we had sponsors, we had all of these costs, we had planned for this big thing. So, you know, there was a day, a tough day, where we had to make a decision. Should we go on or should we postpone?
And then magically, God bless the Swedish politicians, where they're like, oh, 25th of February, I think that was that year. We have no more COVID, you know, people can be as close as they want to each other. And, you know, that obviously helped boost activities. But I think coming back to your question, Anna, I think what you're asking for, like, you know, how do you set this up in a successful way? We've also learned throughout the past few years, like there's some mechanics to it. There's some mechanics to it, and some you can't shy away from, you can't ignore, you need to get those right. Otherwise, it won't work. And again, it comes back to, do you understand your audience? And there's different levels of how you understand your audience. I'm a firm believer of, you need to understand the space yourself, meaning that you need to have been very active in the space. Just imagine now if I would arrange a conference for plumbers. I have no idea what plumbers do. Like, I know that they make sure the water runs and so on, but I don't know what tools they use. I don't know what their challenges are. Like, if you don't know anything about a space, I think it's difficult for people to unite around you. So first of all, it's important that, like, you know, make sure that if you're trying to set up a community or a session or a meeting, the people that are fronting it in your organization, they need to be credible among their peers. And I think that's something that helped me and Thomas. We've been doing this for 20 years, being SaaS operators. So that really helped us. And then the second thing is that we just didn't decide, like, let's do an event. We have an idea of what people want to listen to and so on. No, we had a conversation with lots and lots of people, lots of CEOs, lots of executives to understand, hey, if we do an event, like, what would make you come to an event? What would make you pay for a ticket? What would make you dedicate 3 days to fly out to this arrangement? And then we understood which type of topics they were relevant, what kept them up at night. We also understood there that it's not just about the sessions. You know, they also are very keen on interacting with each other. So that helps us understand, like, okay, then we need to design an element here where they can interact with each other, both in a structured way and in an informal way. So I think that helped us a lot. And for us, then we also realize that, you know, to keep this as a, you know, make sure we have a strong delivery, we need to keep the group cohesive. And that brings us back again, you need to be of a certain size. That's what we promote. You need to have a certain title. So our ICP, if you may, is, you know, operators VP level or higher working for a European headquarter company, 2 million euros in ARR. And then around that, people started to forming an understanding. And then we also involved, you know, the community to like, do you want to stay on stand on stage? Do you want to help with this and that? And then people felt a sense of belonging, but also that they are part of making this together. We wouldn't have ever managed to create the first event if the community wouldn't have stepped up and really helped us out.
And a few things there. We believe in events of a certain size. We don't aim to be 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people at an event. We think that a good size is maximum 1,000, 1,200 people in order for you to not just become a name on a badge, but actually be able to interact with people, see people several times during the days and so on. We also make sure that only 10% of the tickets is available for non-B2B SaaS companies. So investors, recruiters, consultants, agencies, whatnot, can access 10% of the tickets, which means that, you know, it really becomes a community event. And then also we want to have a lot of fun. We like to have fun. We like to have a good party. We have social activities around it. So without any additional cost, you can join the paddle tournament. You can go on a canal tour. You can play the poker tournament. You can do run or morning yoga. And these are things that we arrange. So it's not like just because you sign up for the paddle tournament, your email goes to someone else or something like that. So we want to, you know, keep people together. We want to sort of take them hostage for a few days and make sure that they, you know, spend a lot of time together. And I think that's one of the successes from the events we do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've heard only good stuff. I mean, people who went and talked to me about it, and I was like, literally, I was experiencing the...
What have you heard?
So, like, everyone's impressed that you guys have food and good food that you don't have to, you know.
That's also important. It's included, food and drinks.
Right. And yeah, and just the kind of the element where it's work and fun. And that's what I wanted to ask you about, to be honest, because like you said, you are being like pulled into certain directions, like what the talks are supposed to be, what the, you know, the topics or the tracks are supposed to be based on what the community is talking about, right? So you first you ask your people what they're interested in, so like their challenges and stuff, but also, you know, give them an opportunity to just mingle, go around, network. So let's kind of split this question into two, right? First is, what have you noticed, like, over all the events that you've done in 2024, what were kind of the recurring topics? Like, what were the challenges that people wanted to solve and wanted to talk about? And second, do you think, and this is kind of just the narrative that I also noticed at a few conferences where I've been, do people actually go to talks? Like, do people still want to listen to the guy or girl on stage? Or now it's more towards networking and we want more socializing and we want more, you know, just one-on-ones.
You take number one and I take number two, Daniel.
All right. 2024 is it's a different year again in B2B SaaS. And if we look at when we started this 3 years ago, it was full throttle on everybody. It was grow, grow, grow. Geo expansions, hire more. How do we accelerate? Like, you know, how do we put napalm on the fire here so it grows even stronger, even more mighty? And then, as we all know, there was a crisis. Then everybody switched towards some kind of a, I don't want to call it safety mode, but people went to like, okay, we can't grow at all costs. We need to get closer to profitability. Ideally, we get profitable. The capital markets were expecting that. You know, it dried out a little bit. I guess, Anna, for you and your colleagues, that was probably prime time to pick up companies. what has happened now in...
No comments.
No comments there. Okay. In 2024, and even a little bit before that, we are back at a transition again now where founders, capital markets, owners, the entire industry is again valuing growth more than profitability. So everybody is being told, and if they don't understand it, and if they are listening to this, growth is much more important than profitability still, unless you're like a $500 million company. That is different. So what we see now is that people are discussing in our forums, like, how do I step on the gas again, but slightly different compared to, let's say, 2021? Like, how do I get more out of my team? How do I get more out of our business without necessarily spending more money? We still have to do all of these things. You know, we still need to ideally like move into a new geography. We still need to add another product to our portfolio and so on. Like, how do we make that in a streamlined way? So it's all about growing, but in a much more efficient way. And then you can imagine on an individual level, we have, you know, you work with marketing. We look at all the marketeers. They are discussing in our forums like, hey, my goal for 2024 and 2025 is to increase, you know, top of funnel, to increase, you know, how much revenue we contribute to the pipe and all of these things, but I can't necessarily spend more money. So what has happened here is also changed a little bit of behavior and how people operate. While in 2021, people could experiment. I do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Let's see what works and so on. We see a lot more now, especially the best in class. They know what works for their particular product and clientele and so on. And then they have to double down. You can't necessarily do everything at once like potentially you could do a few years ago. So people are much more specific in, you know, where, what they pick and choose, how to invest their money and so on. And I think that's a trend that's healthy for our space. Because frankly, it was unhealthy in 2021. So it's super healthy how it is right now. And we are big advocates of this. So I think that's going to continue going into 2025 as well.
All right. Okay. So to be a little bit cocky here, I would say that at SaaSiest in Malmö, we have the largest stage for B2B SaaS in Europe. And we really put focus on getting people into the sessions. So we designed the whole event. So when there is sessions, it's basically nothing going on anywhere else. So I know that many events, they have networking. You know, we can book these one-to-one meetings through a networking app and so on. You can only do that in the breaks. So during the other time, when there is a session, we actually push people into the session. We have people going and you know, encouraging people to, now it's time to go to session, and pushing them in there. And there are several reasons for that. You know, we try to have world-class speakers. We are flying in speakers from the US. We have speakers from all across Europe and the region where we are in. And in order to get those speakers, you need to have, you know, an audience. And we also know how great content we have. So it would be a waste not spending the time in those sessions. And I think it's super important. We go to event after event. It could be, you know, a great speaker and there is like 30 people in the audience in a big auditorium. And it doesn't create a good experience for anyone actually in an event. So we think it's super important to design it that way. So when there is great content in the sessions, people should be in the sessions. Otherwise, they can do networking, or when there's social activities, you can do that. So yeah, that's how we want to design it.
Yeah. And just to add to that as well, some of these requirements, I believe you have to set way before the event. People know Thomas and myself now. They know our philosophy about how we build a community, what creates an interaction and so on. And we've been very clear with our community that, you know, we can only do this together if everybody contributes.
Yeah.
And I think there's almost a social code when you hang out in the social forum. Like, you know, if somebody has taken the time to prepare something big and takes the stage, we should all not just show respect to it, but also, you know, show an interest into that. Because otherwise, if nobody pays attention and shows interest, where that person is not coming back again, and he or she is going to tell their friends that, you know, that audience was shit, I don't want to spend time there. So that social code, I think, helps. But it's nothing that you can implement right there and then during the first event day.
No, that and another thing.
That is part of the social code that lives sometimes invisibly in the community, how we expect to interact with each other and treat each other.
Yeah, and another thing is that we don't sell any speaker slots. So you see that, you know, a lot. And if you know that this is a sponsor, they are going to do a pitch of the product and so on, you might not want to go to that session. But if it's a person that is active in the community, you might know them, you might, you know their colleagues and so on, it becomes another totally other thing. And that's probably also something why people want to go to these sessions.
I will let you in on a secret here, Anna. I know this is, you know, for, it doesn't scale, but sometimes you have to do things that don't scale. I personally vet each presentation. Every presentation that has been on any SASE stage, I have personally vetted. I have pushed back on people and said, like, look, this is way too salesy, or it's not distinct enough. I have no idea what the takeaways are here. And I know it's easy to hand that to somebody else. But then it comes back to, like, you can hand it to somebody that's really hardworking, but if he or she doesn't understand the space, then it's like, this slide looks really good and yeah, it reads well and that makes sense. Let's run for it. You need to understand the space. Otherwise, you can't secure the quality.
And I'm very thankful that Daniel does this.
Thank you, Thomas. I appreciate it.
I'm absolutely loving this. Honestly, like, you rule with an iron fist and, like, kind of, you know, I feel like when you're in a community, when you're like managing in a way so many people, you have to have rules and they have to be strict. And, you know, I also have a very maybe weird way to kind of find people. I vet every guest.
Yeah,
you know, for
yeah,
our
absolutely.
Event.
And we made it.
Yes.
Sometimes I'm thinking about the amount of research I do on every person that comes here or like in person to our event. And I'm like, ooh, that could have been so much easier and like so much faster if I didn't go into the nitty-gritty of everything, like finding all the possible dirt or like thing that, you know, could come back weird. So yeah, I completely understand. It's a lot of work, but it's so worth it.
And I think also a thing that is a little bit different with, if you look at SASIS, for instance, if you go to the exhibition, every sponsor has the exact same space. So, and I mean, so you won't see any big, a booth from Microsoft that is five times bigger than anything else. We have actually said no to both Microsoft, Google, and AWS several times because we haven't, you know, been in sync with what they can have at the conference. They want to have much more than sort of is something that we can give, right? So we think, you know, everyone gets the same space. It's the same rules for everyone. And I think that's also a thing that, you know, people notice and people appreciate.
Awesome. So I have a question that, you know, kind of turns this around a little bit. So we were talking about your perspective and like how you're building a community. What would be your advice for people who want to find their community, like where to go looking? Because I've been just working on the list of like, I don't know, about 50 SaaS communities, startup communities, tech communities, whatever. You have a lot. And like, how do you choose? Like, you're a SaaS founder. What would you recommend to be looking at if you're looking for audience, for, you know, a stage, for a certain vibe? What's your take on it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And in my opinion, there's two answers to this one that go hand in hand. First of all, I think it's a misconception that people think like, oh, there's 50 communities or 100 or however many they are, and many B2B SaaS, some of them are complementary, that's just niched to a particular role and so on. If you're listening to this, and if you truly care about your career, don't limit yourself. There might be multiple avenues, multiple forums where you can gain a lot of knowledge from. So we always tell our members, like, we don't own their time. We don't own a membership here. If they also find value in hanging out in other forums, fantastic. That's great because our mission here is to make sure that individuals can grow and maybe we can contribute to that a little bit. Somebody else can contribute a little bit more. Together, that individual becomes stronger. We all benefit from it. Our community benefits from it because suddenly that stronger individual still hanging around in our community can share tips and tricks and so on. So I think that's very important to understand, at least from our perspective. So we always encourage people. We want you to hang out, you know, in our forum. If there's other forums, like, go for it. Don't be shy. We'd love to understand what they do well. If we can, you know, replicate some of that, fantastic. I think the second thing that I would say here is really understand what moves the needle for you. Sometimes we see, and it, you know, it's been very typical in the B2B SaaS space, also how you see people operate. Don't just follow trends. If it's not right for you, if it's not right for your the business you're representing, if it's not right for the company you're representing, the clientele you're trying to reach, don't do it just because everybody else does it. And it, the same thing applies for the community. You need to understand, like, what will help me move the needle here as a CPO, CMO, CRO, whatever your title is, the next 12 to 24 months. Then once you understand what you need, try to find out which community can help you with that, which community has people that can help you with those things. I think that's very, very important, because otherwise communities can also be a waste of time. If you hang out with nice people, but none of them help you or help you move the needle, well, then you just spend a bunch of time for no need. And I usually draw a parallel here that a few years ago, like, everybody wanted to do demand generation because Chris Walker said that's the thing you want to do in B2B SaaS. He was very famous, very popular, and so on. And I don't know how many companies started a podcast, B2B SaaS companies started a podcast. And I felt like, you have no idea why you're doing the podcast. You're doing the podcast because a famous marketeer says you need to do a podcast. But is it really the right thing for your business? Is this what will build brand? Is this what will drive revenue, and so on? If you don't ask yourself these questions, you're doing a podcast for nothing. And, you know, rest assured, the majority of those that started the podcast in 2021, 2022, you don't see those podcasts anymore. It was a cool thing to do, but it was not, you know, fit to purpose. It's the same thing with communities. What's your take on this? I mean, obviously, like, now you compile this list, and you guys have your own community, like, and I think you guys have done a really nice job considering what we discussed earlier here. You unite founders predominantly around this bootstrapping mission and being control of your own destiny and so on. Like, what have you seen in the terms of community building, and how do you get people engaged and involved in your call it forums? And I know it goes beyond Dirk's memes, which, by the way, are amazing.
Yeah,
I know, right?
We love them.
Yes, everyone does. I mean, yeah, you're right. Like, first of all, we're super big on this idea that bootstrapping can be really good for you. And, you know, nothing wrong with the VCs. So we, like, the founders of SaaS Group are also VCs. Like, let's be honest about this, right? But just taking into account, like, the fact that we have so much accumulated experience in the space, like, the companies that they had were bootstrapped, the companies that we buy are bootstrapped, we keep them on that kind of bootstrap setup, and we know how it works. And one of the things that the main thing that I realized with the events is just people want to be together, people want to come together. And the reason also why we don't really expand, we had an opportunity, you know, we also have sponsors for our little dinners, and we have an opportunity to go bigger, but we intentionally don't, because we want everyone, it's just, you know, few hours that we spend together. We also talk to people and find out, you know, what they want to discuss there. So every time we give our sponsors or ourselves little time to start that discussion, right, to showcase, like, what we think about a certain topic or challenge, to kind of, again, the kind of begin exploration of, you know, whatever they're interested in, right?
Right.
And so every part of that dinner is kind of fueled with a little bit more. This is what we've heard you also struggle with. So we want to give you, you know, that little nugget of specific knowledge that you're looking for, because, like, say we have Battle as our sponsor, and Andrew Davis shows up and he's talking about B2B SaaS growth, bootstrap growth. And, you know, it's amazing. The wealth of knowledge he brings every time. I'm super inspired by him. So we want to bring, like I said, the a bit of like something different, something, you know, that fuels people and something that people can take with them, but also something that will, you know, make them think right there and then,
right,
what they can discuss and what they can, yep, find. Like, I don't know, maybe there is a partnership opportunity, right? Just sitting next to you at the table. So I think the main kind of idea here for now, because it's not really our job to kind of, you know, build a community, is to just bring people together who really are at the same stage, get them talking, yeah, and just kind of become that brand where you go if, or who you reach out to if you have a certain SaaS challenge, right? So,
I mean, it sounds to me that you're building a community without really, you know, it's a lot of people want to build a community and they get the community manager and they write the community program. But I mean, you do it in practice without maybe intending to build a community.
And I think what you guys have also done really well is, and I don't know if it's by design, I want to believe it's a little bit by design, but it's a little bit organic as well. And it comes back to what we said in the very beginning of our conversation. You have something that acts as the glue. As an outsider, when I look at, you know, some of the things you guys do, you know, and then you have Nathan Latka, you have Adam Robinson, there's some big advocates in the bootstrapping space. And the dialogue has formed a little bit into us against them, us versus them. So there's this little feeling in the bootstrapping community is like, you know, us bootstrappers versus the non-bootstrappers. And I think that's a great base to build a community on. You know, you have that glue, you have something in common, you know. So you got to just continue building on that, whether you did that by design or if it just happened. And sometimes if things happen in the community and you didn't think of it necessarily, but you see it, it's strong, it makes, you know, the community being more energetic and empowered, you just got to let it grow. It's like a mushroom, and hopefully it's a good mushroom.
Hopefully. But all right, I have just one more question for you guys. It's about hack, right? And it can be anything, you know, it can be managing, you know, this enormous numbers of people. Like, again, I will have two events in February and it's about like 80 people and already like people are pushing and pulling and they want this and they want that. And you're like, oh my God, okay, we need to kind of cater for everybody. Or, you know, it can be mental health, you know, just being there at the, you know, at the stage, at the center of attention all the time, or it can be, you know, building a community or something that works for you.
Yeah. Great questions, all of them. Thomas is the hack master on our end, so I'm not going to pretend here to be the hack master, but I'm going to give you one thing that I think when it comes to the events and so on, that could potentially help based on the challenges you just described. It's nice to have one-to-one conversations, but if you feel that these 80 people all have similar type of requests or questions and so on, sometimes it's also good to have a one-to-many structured exercise. Is there a way for you to be like, hey, there's a lot of questions about, you know, if you can refund the ticket or whatever questions you get, I don't know, like, or if it's for the speakers and so on. So therefore, on this particular date, there's a Zoom call. Show up there, ask your questions. I'll make sure to address them. And if you can't make the call, I'm going to send you the recording. So sometimes there's also a way to be personal, but in a one-to-many type of exercise. And when it comes to the event, I don't know if your question was specifically about, you know, the psychological and mental awareness at an event or outside of the event.
It can be anything that works for you.
Or is it to get people to the event, or what were you after? I mean, we'll
schedule a Zoom call and
yeah, exactly. And I mean, in a way, we are a little bit, yeah, we do a little bit of both. I mean, it's hard work. We do a lot of one-to-one outreach and so on. So we make sure to be really engaged, personally engaged for it. Yeah, so try. Either you do it, you know, manually, or you do it semi-manually. Try to be personal, because that's what, you know, since you're working with community, it's all about the people, right? And you have to also be all about the people when you work with it. So remember that.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great hack. That's, well, maybe not a hack, but something really crucial to remember.
It's a philosophy, yeah.
Yes. Awesome. Okay, we never had philosophies here, so that's okay. All right. Thank you so much, guys. I mean, it's really fascinating what you do, how you do it. I think I've learned a lot, and kind of also I think it reassured me that communities need a lot of work and a lot of knowledge of what they are about, and a lot of belief of what you're building. So thank you so much for sharing the philosophy.
Thank you for having workflow, us.
And happy to do it again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would love to.
All right. Thank you.
Perfect. I hope to see you at Sassiest.
Yeah, definitely. Now we're doing London, Malmo, and Amsterdam. So a lot of opportunities to meet.
I'll share all the links.
Super.
Thank you. And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.